Well, I guess we can start that from the beginning. I guess, you're from Cleveland and stuff. How did you get into to singing? Did you, as an early age?
Just at an early age, I discovered that I really wanted to sing. That music was within me, and it was my thing, And from there on, I just, practiced a lot, sung a lot, just stayed at the stereo with records and playing them, and just exploring the world of music. And that's how I got my start. I also started singing in church. I
Okay.
started singing in church, and and then into school, even elementary school, junior high school, high
Okay.
school, going into as a teenager, entering into a lot of talent shows and singing in talent shows. And basically just doing a lot of singing and doing my thing.
Now, I think one of the things that those of us on an international scene would think about America and recognize that you guys have a lot of sports, basketball, football, baseball, lot of different things. And so you always wonder that a lot of kids tend to go into sports and do other things and singing maybe not as a priority. But in your case, what was it? Did sports become wasn't as important? You singing was more of a passion for you?
Oh yeah, definitely. Singing was a passion. Yeah, just music is what I've been doing all my life. It's my passion. It's what I really love doing, and I've been doing it, all my life. It's basically all and everything that I do,
Yeah.
that I've been a part of. I did participate in some sports as a kid, and as a teenager, played football in junior high school. Played little league baseball for a few years, but what I really did, other than my singing, from the age of 9 to 18, I boxed. So I was a
Oh.
boxer. Yeah, I
Okay.
was a boxer, man, and I won, a few championships, AAU, National PAL, and I won a Golden Glove. I got a Golden Glove championship, novice division,
Wow.
125 pound champ. Yeah,
Wow.
so I did a little bit of, sports, but within that, I never lost vision of, my music career and what I wanted to do musically.
Now, being that you were from, say, Cleveland, and I guess, most of us think of Hollywood, Los Angeles and New York, where the big music scene might have been in those days. In those early days, did you think about becoming a recording artist, or was it just enjoyed singing and it was just like stuff you did, or did you think of yourself making it as a recording artist back when you were still in high school? Or
I always wanted to make it. I wanted to perform in front of millions of people. I wanted to make it. I wanted to.
and during those days then, with the vision about making it, did you think, okay, I'll make it on my own, or did the I know you're part of the legendary the Rude Boys, but did you think, okay, I'm gonna go on my own, or how did the idea of being part of the of a group come about?
Interesting. I never looked at it like that. I just basically wanted to sing, and of course be alone in the beginning. But as time went, and I met Edward Buddy Banks, we started doing a gospel group together,
Okay.
him and my friend Mark Jenkins. So we did that, and it just I never thought about being solo. Well, I mean, I always thought about being solo,
Yeah.
but when the group thing came, I entertained it. I was like, hey, however I can make it, that's what I'm gonna do. And
Okay.
so I proceeded to be part of the Rude Boys.
Okay. Did they already have the name, or the how did the name come the name come about?
Well, we had a gospel group called Power, me, Buddy Banks, Mark Jenkins, and a guy named Eric Davis. But Buddy said, man, we should start doing R&B. So he's like, okay, cool. So me and Buddy left and just started doing R&B, and he came up with the name Rude Boys one day. He said that he seen Rude Boy on a button on Prince's jacket on
Okay.
the Controversy album. Prince had Rude Boy on a button, and he was
Yeah.
just like, man, let's call ourselves the Rude Boys. So basically, the idea came from a button on Prince's jacket on the Controversy album.
Okay, now the thing you just said is you're starting off in gospel, and all of a sudden you said let's switch to R&B. Now that seems like a quick turnaround from being in gospel, singing a particular type of song to a particular audience, to just saying, yeah, let's just push that aside and go this direction. What was that, as easy as that, or was it soul searching and making that decision?
It's a no-brainer.
Okay.
Took no thought about, like, should we do that? We just basically eased on through and just started really working on R&B songs, which I was already, you know, singing R&B anyway through talent shows and different stuff like that. So, yeah.
But what was the big difference then between the gospel that you were doing to switching to R&B? What would you say would be the difference?
Well, the difference is that it was more of a crowded line. A lot of more people were, you know, trying to do R&B than gospel. It was a wide variety of music, you know, from pop to R&B to jazz to rock. It was so many different genres that you could be, you know, you could be a part of. And, you know, I sung all types of music, even opera.
Wow.
Opera training in high school. So, you know, but, you know, other than doing gospel, just R&B was more open. You could sing about more subject matters. And it was just, you know, it was cool.
Okay. And you didn't get pushback from family and friends, like, come on, we know we're raising you up as a gospel artist. This is kind of leaving the faith, and kind of that wasn't the case?
I did all.
Today, but now how did the so now you guys are doing the R&B now, was it self-contained where you were writing and producing your own stuff, or were you singing covers back in those early days?
Well, being in talent shows and stuff, I started off doing covers.
And who would you emulate? Who would you gravitate to when you were doing covers?
We did a lot of some of everybody, man. A lot of different groups. One group, namely LeVert, used to do a lot of Gerald LeVert songs, which is ironic. Like, what's crazy is that we met up with him later on down the line, and he was basically our leader and the one who put us on. But we would sing Babyface songs, a lot of old school R&B, 70s soul songs, okay. You know, and just stuff like that.
Yeah. And then was there a blueprint as to how do we then become signed, or do you find a manager, or how did you think about, okay, we're a group now, how do we go from being a group to become a recording artist on a label?
Not really. What we did with that was that we already were like working on our own songs in the studio. We were working on our own songs in the studio and doing our thing with that. We was already recording, writing songs. I was writing songs since I was a kid.
Okay.
So, you know, I always really wanted to do my own songs anyway.
Okay.
All of us did.
Okay. And so that was a case where you were writing your own stuff, and in a mix of recording, was it a hope that you just release it on your own and hope that somebody would hear it, or you'd shop it around?
We did our own thing. We had a little song that we tried to put out with this guy who invested with us. Named Big John. We had a song called You Must Know Magic. And it was 4 minutes, we put it out, but then it really didn't do nothing. Mm-hmm. It was just like a local song. And then some things went wrong, and the guy who was pushing us got in trouble. And we just put it to the side, and then we just started just doing, you know, we continued on performing at local bars and clubs, different things like that. And then just in the midst of that, we met Gerald LeVert. Me and Edward Banks, we met Gerald LeVert.
Wow. Has he already come out with, I mean, had LeVert already come out, or you just knew him from his dad, the OJs? Or by the time you met him?
Yeah, Gerald LaVert at the time, when we met Gerald LaVert at that time, he was already doing music. He was already on the scene. He had hit big with Casanova with the work with the group LaVert.
Wow.
So they had already been out. They were already a group that was successful.
Yeah.
And so we met him. We met him in Cleveland at a club called The Reason Why. Sitting in with the band singing. I said, hey, y'all got Gerald LaVert from LaVert. I was like, come on, girl, come up here and sing with us. And we were singing a song called Everything Must Change. And Gerald came up there and he sung with us. And man, it was a very, very explosive, song. Like that night, we really rocked the house. And Gerald expressed to us that he wanted to work with us. So the next day we went, we met him at a location, which was his mom's house to her. You know where he was at that time, I believe.
Yeah.
Big mansion, and it was a huge house in Shaker Heights, Ohio. And we get there, me and Buddy, to come sing. And when we walk up into the house and turn the corner, Eddie LaVert was there also.
Wow, he's young.
So we auditioned, but not really auditioned. He had decided that he wanted to work with us, but we sung again for him. And Gerald was like, "Look, man, I really want to work with y'all. You know, I want to do something with y'all." So that's the history. He took, without us even working on an album or getting anything done, he got us a deal before even being heard.
Wow.
Sylvia Rohn, who was the president of Atlantic Black Music, she signed us on to Atlantic Records.
My goodness.
And our first album we did was called Rude Awakening.
Yeah, and that's had the biggest one, the biggest album that you released out of the three?
Most definitely. Rude Awakening had two number one hits on the Billboard.
Yeah.
Are You Lonely? And then, of course, Written All Over Your Face, which we won Billboard R&B Song of the Year that year. So,
I've asked this to a lot of the people, a lot of recording artists that I interview, is about when you have a hit record and a hit album early on, does that become, would you prefer it being your second or third being your bigger one? And you know, building up, or did you just say, "Oh goodness, we've got a hit. That means we have more space to do what we want in a second." What was it like for you guys?
Just want to win. You want to win right away.
Okay.
You want to hit. You want to hit it big right away. You know, and when you're an artist, it shouldn't be no pressure as far as you doing your work, because really you work. We do these albums to just express ourselves, is really expressing. So I don't see no pressure when it comes to writing music. I just write what comes from my heart and mind.
But that question of your first album having, you know, two number one singles, songs, winning an award, being selling so much, and then when it comes to the second album, do you then think we need to emulate this, or is it like, we're relaxed now, we've got money in the bank, with not physical money, but that sort of capital with the label and the public, so we can kind of chill a little bit on our second and not feel the kind of pressure there?
We just after that first time, we just went and got back in the studio. We just did our thing. We just did what we do best. You know, we were very confident in the material that we were doing. We were very confident in the songs and the production processing. When you got a great guy like Gerald LaVert, it makes things much easier.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it easy. You know, when you got a legend and someone that knows that chemistry and the methods to do and write, and you know, so with a little bit of strategies or whatever to make it work. So it was easy.
Okay. So then what happened between the your second album? Because there was almost like a 4-year gap between your third album as a group. Why the mold or gap?
Well, we went straight after Rude Awakening. We went straight into Rude House, which we did, which we spawned a couple decent songs that hit on the chart a little bit. But we had a gap in between, you know, there with that, but we we that was our last album together, which was The Rule House, which came out in 1992. We came out with a single called I'm My Kind of Girl. And then after that, we put a song, we had a song called Go Ahead and Cry that we did. And then we put out a song, Miss You So Much. And those were the songs that we put out on the album. It did pretty good. But the label just really decided that, you know, it was a few internal problems with the group. A couple of group members had some problems, and just, you know, some of the group members wasn't happy with what the label was doing, and kind of the relationship just probably fell apart, I would say. You know, so just didn't work out. So after that, I went on and stayed on Atlantic as a solo artist, and I did an album called Putting It Down on Atlantic Records, a solo thing. It sold like 250,000 copies at that time, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
They really didn't push the album or promote it like I feel they could have. But it made a little noise. And then after that, really was just out here, took a real big layoff on with the Rude Boys. I wasn't no longer in the group anyway. Took a long hiatus, and I just concentrated on music production and writing. So I did a lot of writing and production for a lot of people.
Okay.
You know, in between that time, and really started focusing on the writing, because that's where the money was. And I did, right. And so I did really well in that area, and kind of pulled back from singing a little bit, man, until, you know, later on, I probably did my first project where I was doing something for real, probably in, I would say 2005.
Okay.
I did something around 2004, 2005. I tried to do a little independent thing. And then Gerald passed.
Yeah.
And once he passed, we as the group came back and got together. And we started getting back on the road, doing some shows and whatnot. But we had been off as a group so long, man. It was crazy. And we just started our journey back doing, you know, songs on, you know, and doing, you know, doing shows on the road. And then after that, we disbanded again as a group. And I restructured the group, and I went and got two other guys, Kenny Miles and G LeBeau. And we picked up and just started doing the Rude Boys, putting out a couple singles. And around 2012 or 13, we did a few songs, putting things out. And just really been on the road doing shows since then. And you know, recently last year I did some solo stuff. I put out like three videos, three songs, and did that. And that's what I've been doing.
Wow. Now I noticed the because you kind of gone real fast about the sort of breaking up and then doing it behind the scenes, and I do wonder then, when you, there's quite a lot of work, you know, you're going to a concert right now, and it, so it's quite a lot of traveling and stuff as compared to when you're behind the scenes writing for other people. Did you then think, you know, I'm actually enjoying this, I can have a stable life just writing and stuff, you know, going to the recording studio and stuff, and not have to the stress and hassle of promoting a record and internal battles and splitting the royalties and all that stuff? And did you never feel tempted just to stay in that lane, or what drew you out to go back onto the road and singing?
I really like being on the road singing more. I mean, the studio, I'm in the studio anyway.
Yeah.
I got my own studio and that's basically what I do, you know. I do my own thing, and so there's no pressure. You know, I'm always creating. I'm actually working on a project now that I'm going to release in March of 2021. A new, you know, project that I'm doing. The Rude Boys, we also have some songs that we're about to do some videos for, and just put it out there, man. You know, the music business is so much different now, man. It's really different, and there's a lot that comes with it. So, you know, you just try to do the best music you can, put it out there, promote it as best you can.
Yeah.
You know, build your fan base and let your fans know that you got, you know, that you got new material out, you know, and you just push it. You know, that's basically what it do.
Do you think it's better now for not just old established acts from the trying to put out new stuff now, but even new artists, do you think it's the industry is a lot better the way the marketplace is for releasing music and getting it out there, or harder?
I think this may be a great era for independence. If you got the money to push yourself, it's a good thing. You can build your fan base up. It's a great thing, you know, if you know what you're doing, if you know all the nuances and the ins and outs of the business, you know, especially on the digital platform. I mean, it's easy. You just got to push. You just got to really have good material. You have to have something that people grasp onto. And you have to have the know-how, how to market yourself. And,
yeah.
I mean, if you do that and you take it into your hands and you work it right, you can make a lot of money, man. And you know, the format is just open so much with social networking.
Yeah.
You know, you're available and, you know, it's wide open. So if you're doing the right thing and making the right decisions, you can make it. You can really make it happen. How far are we?
Woo! Well, the other thing, though, is that people aren't buying music as they did. So back in the day, you'd go in, buy an album, so you know physically you've sold an album or a single. Very digital now, so there's, you know, Spotify, Apple, Tidal, there's so many different ways just to listen to it. And so I do wonder, as an artist, do you then think, okay, we're writing our stuff, we still have our publishing stuff to help collate stuff, but is the money coming in, is it coming in not as much as quick as it used to? And then you have to still rely on concerts and sort of live music to sort of really balance it out more.
Yeah, I think it's a balance. You need to be doing live shows, definitely putting your material out there for people to hear it, but you definitely need to do videos. You need everything. You need the shows, you need the videos to put out there, and you just got to really be having it on all the digital platforms to make it available for people, and that's basically it, you know.
Yeah. Now, I read in your bio that part of the things that you sort of missed out was the fact that you started to become an entrepreneur, you know, going into coffee shops, and which is quite unique, and it's on. That seems like a lot of management to you know, not just it's one thing to invest in something, but another thing to own and think about the marketing stuff. How did you sort of get into that, and how did you then be able to invest the time and energy to make sure it's successful?
Coffee is my passion, man. As you see, you bring a smile to my face because it's really doing well for me. I love the coffee business, and it's phenomenal, man. It's phenomenal. I love it. You know, I love it, man. It's my passion. You know, I got the roasting plant going on. It's lovely just watching beans come in as green beans, and you be like, how is this gonna work out? And you see the roasting process with it, and it just looks, it's a beautiful thing, and the people love coffee.
Yeah.
It's the second biggest commodity in the world after oil. And very profitable, and you know, I just love it, man. That's my thing.
What do you do differently in your stores? Because, you know, there's competition, Starbucks and all this stuff around, especially in America. You've got a lot of competition. A lot of Americans love their coffee. That's the one thing we watch on TV and stuff. What do you do differently to make your brand stand out so that people, your customers, stay loyal?
I just basically just give them a good product, man. Give them good coffee. It spots, you know, good customer service. And just put a twist on and do things that other coffee companies are not doing, by just creating a fun atmosphere, poetry nights, you know, okay. Poetry, open mic. We do a lot of events, networking events for job, you know, people looking for jobs, and all kind of different stuff, man. Just try to be creative with it and push the coffee along with it.
How do you balance your time then between being on the road like you are right now, being in the studio, and then running a successful coffee business?
It's a great balance, man, because, you know, especially now, we haven't been on the road. This is actually my first show since February. So, you know, everything's been shut down. And even the show that we're doing now is going to be a Zoom show. So it's an in-studio show that we're doing. And, you know, we're really no audience. So it's been really... it's easy to balance. I've actually been able to pay more attention to the coffee during this time. I've been able to spend more time working on the coffee, and you know, as things pick up, it's cool because during the week I'm not really doing. You know, as entertainers, we really don't travel much during the week. Travel more, so that Friday kick in or Thursday kick in. You know, I got Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to do my coffee, and I'm not doing nothing. I'm not working there. I'm just going to the places and just checking on it, making sure everything is good and working, and engaging with people, going to special events, and you know, there, and that's about it. So it's no problem.
How many do you have? How many shops or baristas do you have?
Right now, I got one new location that we just started doing. Right now, I've had like about four of them, but I've closed them down due to just in that market, it didn't work. But right now, currently, I got a new spot in Cleveland, up in Cleveland Heights, do a spot called for Walkie Burst. And we got coffee there. We do the smoothies, coffee. We got vegan and healthy actions for food and all that. And it's working pretty good. It's doing pretty good.
Okay. Now, I think the other thing that I noticed in your bio, which was sad, is the fact that it seemed as if you decided to sort of take a break from music after not just the loss of Gerald, but also a number of close people, especially your wife. Did you consider giving up music during, especially after your wife passed, or was it something that you just needed time off?
I actually never took time off from music, just really being more so in the studio and being creative and writing and doing just what comes to me. So never really took a break from music. I took a break more so from singing in the late 90s, going into the early 2000s, because I was doing the production, writing production, and working with a lot of other artists. So, but I never really have taken a break, not much.
Yeah. But as a performer, not just because I guess if you've been passionate about it from a young age, you should always be around it. But the actual being on stage, that's the part that you said, I need to just separate from that for a while.
If shows come, I wouldn't turn them down. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to perform because that's my favorite time when I'm performing. I would give nothing. I would never give that up for anything in the world. So that's my thing. You know, I would never take a break. I'm too young to take a break, man.
but I do wonder about the performance side, because we do get a lot of people, and I guess probably this is where the if you've been singing from a young age, it's quite different. But we get a lot of people who get into the music, the industry, and they get disillusioned by it, and especially anxiety being on stage and just sort of living out of a suitcase, traveling a lot, and that part of it, promoting albums, the whole marketing becomes what they don't like. They don't mind singing, but the business, the money, the fallouts and relationships, the things that make them feel as if, you know, this is not for me, and sort of move away. You mentioned that you and your you guys you grew up with forming a group, but having little discord that sort of made you guys separate for a while. Did the industry itself become something you just disliked, not the singing or the music, but the industry and the business and how that engine works?
Well, you know, there's some things that I don't like about the music business, I love music, man. I love expression. I love being an artist, and being able to express myself. Yeah, the music business can be frustrating and discouraging, but I don't let that get to me as far as my creativity, you know, because I do music because I love it and I have a passion for it. I'm not doing it at the end of the day to make money. That's not my main objective, to be rich or be famous. You know, my main objective is just for me to be able to artistically express myself, and just being able to, for somebody to hear it, you know, whether I'm making money or not. So yeah, I see the charger. So that's basically, you know, my thing when it comes to music.
The question I had about, because one of the things I noticed recently when we, especially when we, even if we're on social media and you play a clip more than 30 seconds, you know, Instagram or Facebook would say this music is owned by Warner Brothers, Sony, you know, Universal. And even an artist can't even play their own stuff that they write for a period of time because the label seems to have ownership of it. And when you look back at when you guys wrote your own stuff and you had your hits, and then you hear about Prince and Michael Jackson, now even Kanye talking about the more successful they became, the more they start realizing we've made all this money, but we don't seem to have a bigger ownership of the stuff that we've created. Did you sense that as when you guys came out and you were having this hit, that we're writing all this stuff and creating it, but somebody else has a bigger ownership of this in the long run? Forget about now, but 10 years, 20 years down the road, they will take it away. Did that part of come to your knowledge?
Yeah, you know, it was weird. It's really weird when your creativity, something that you created, somebody like own the rights. But I guess that's what comes with being in the music business here, man. It's all about, like, you got to trade off something, man. So that's, again, why I say this era is a great era where, you know, you can retain your own masters and you can have your own music and it's yours. So that's one of the things why I say that the independent era is a great era to be in. And for you to have ownership of your own songs. But back then, you know, when you were signed to these labels and stuff like that, it just came with the program, man. That's just how it was. So you see a lot of artists who recently have got their masters back, like Chris Brown and a few other people. They bought their masters back.
Wow.
You know, you see it happening now. So it's just, you know, part of the game, man.
Yeah. But then, because it seems if, you know, after, you know, you had the fateful night of meeting Gerald Levert and things just took off like that. Did it happen so quick that you didn't, did you guys know about the publishings, about royalties, about all this stuff prior to getting signed, so that you knew? Because we've watched the New Edition story, TLC talking about we're selling millions of albums, but we didn't get any money because they didn't really understand about being signed to a production company who takes all the money and stuff. Did you guys know about that early on, so that at least you knew what was coming in and you were assigned to the business part of things?
Yeah, we learned because our lawyer explained it to us.
Okay. And,
at the time, we were listening. I'm like, wow, so this is how it go? And we're like, yeah, hey, you get an opportunity. So, you know, you get a standard first-time artist contract and you find out that those are the ins and outs of the game. So we were very aware, you know, of what the situation presented as far as the publishing and the masters being owned by the label, and, you know, percentages going to management and to the production and all that, man. So it was, you know, it's an eye-opening experience, I'll tell you that. You
know? Was it hard knowing that a record sells and it's going to sell for $10 and you probably get less than, you know, 50 cents or something like that? Was it hard performing and the numbers coming in and knowing that, man, at the end of the day, our paychecks are not going to mirror up to the fact we've got a number one record? Or did you guys just got caught up in the success and the fame that the money part didn't really think come until later?
Everything and how it went, and you know, because I was a student of the game. You know, I did a lot of studying into the music business and then seeing stories about other artists before making it. And a lot of those stories were New Edition. A lot of people didn't know about. But as time went, you hear, you know, rumblings and ramblings of, you know, artists being disgruntled or whatever. But we never were like that artist, to be honest. I wasn't anyway. Maybe a couple of the other guys, you know, they felt that way, but I wasn't one of the ones. You know, I was happy to be just doing what I'm doing and being able to be given the opportunity. And I'm just learning about the business as you're going and in the business and just looking to the future and, you know, looking forward to owning my own stuff and, you know, being able to, you know, have more of a chokehold on my own material.
So going forward, I know that you mentioned that you're looking at making videos with not just with the Rude Boyz, but both yourself. But over the next 5 years, what's the plan? Are you going to start your own label, or is that needed anymore to put out stuff? Are you going to start developing other artists? Or how do you see the next couple of years going for you?
I currently have my own label called Brother to Brother International. That is owned by me and my best friend, Mark Jenkins. These songs that I put out last year with Brother to Brother International. We have an artist named Dear Nero Sign, which is a rapper, and I did a song with them. So we've been working with him, and we're about to release a song called Run It Up in the next month or so with him. Just always looking to work with different artists, writing and producing. I haven't really signed any artists or anything. Really just focusing on my career and just getting the best out of what I can get out of me now. And if somebody comes along that I like, we'll see, you know, possibly work with them. But just within the next 5 years, really just continuing to work on my music tour, work with my coffee and push my Urban Joe coffee. And that's about it.
Yeah. Are you still writing for other people? Because if you did that quite a bit in the late 90s, early 2000s, did you just stop writing and producing for others and just to focus on yourself?
Yeah, I started working more so with artists or whatever, but just really was focusing on my music, man, and writing. But now, you know, I'm really just still more so focused on myself.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I definitely appreciate the you know, that, as I said, catching you on your way to the show and the stuff, and sometimes the signal goes in and out and stuff. But I think one of the things that we tend to ask our guests towards the end is, if you were stuck in an elevator and you had a choice to watch a movie while they get it fixed, what movie would you want to watch while they get before they get you out?
Ray. The Ray Charles movie with Jamie Foxx.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the one that he got the Oscar for. Okay. And if they're saying, okay, we're going to put the movie on, but before we do, we can give you one of your favorite songs to listen to. What would you want to listen? What song would that be?
Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson.
Wow. Okay. Why that song?
Because Man in the Mirror is one of my favorite songs of all time, because just they're talking about you loving yourself, knowing yourself, and making better changes within yourself. I'm a big stickler. I'm a big stickler about people understanding who they are and being able to attach to themselves and knowing why they're here in this universe and knowing what their purpose is in life. And that song speaks volumes when it comes to self-love and being intuitive and self-discovery.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the way Michael performs just as well with the passion and stuff. I guess I just never really got to know who the artist that inspired sort of you, because you did mention singing Babyface, I'm sure the Dells, but was there an artist that you, group of artists that you personally was like, I'm going to mold my voice to try and sing like him, or trying to, like, these were my sort of, not role models, but the where you're thinking as a singer, if I could be in this lane, that out, you know, I've really made it.
My favorite singer of all time is Stevie Wonder. So I never tried to really mold my voice and sound like him, okay. But I just really admired admired his voice, and he's my all-time favorite. And then second to him would be Frank Sinatra. I love Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
So those are my two favorite singers.
Now, I can understand Stevie Wonder. I mean, you know, as a songwriter, a performer, singer, you know, he's probably one of the top three. But Frank, and I think, you know, it's quite unusual to understand how Frank, being a sort of a, I don't even know how to, a contemporary type of artist from an R&B side, what was it about Frank Sinatra that stands out?
How smooth his voice was, his tone, and just how cool of a cat he was, man. Yeah. He's a cool guy. I like the swagger. I like the way that he just crooned. He was a smooth crooner. And I just admired the way that he just sung, man. The smoothness, the tone, the correctness.
Yeah. And yeah, I think this goes back to what you said earlier when you said that you left the gospel scene because it was a smaller sort of market, and then you sort of looked into R&B because it had a wider market, but that you were more versatile with your music. But I can now see how trying to mold yourself a little bit like Frank, who, it's, you know, I never really understood how he was able to just become so popular. You know, and I guess it's a style of music that he had that really appealed to a lot of people, which you've got to be in the industry to really know that. But do you ever think, you know, as you're going forward, that you'd go, you know, back to gospel into pop or into classical or stuff going forward? Do you think you'd expect move around in that, or would you still stay predominantly in your R&B now that you have control over what you write, what you put out?
I've been wanting to do jazz. Jazz is another genre that I have been experiencing, you know, cutting records in the studio doing. So I have tried out jazz. You know, that's one of the areas. Revisiting gospel, doing some gospel stuff, music, things like that. But just maybe some jazz, gospel.
Okay. Well, definitely. I mean, I would, you know, I know you're on your way to your show, and I really appreciate the time and stuff. We had a little technical differences in between stuff, but it was, that was good to just to hear in you know, the journey, the experience, and I think a lot of what a lot of people are seeing now is the fact that there's a shift from majors to the independent side. And I guess if you had an advice for any new up and coming artist who is running after a major label, what would you, you know, would you, what would you sort of give advice to somebody that's probably new, that's, that, you know, they've got their writers, producers, and now they're thinking, how do I get my stuff out?
I would just tell them to work hard in the studio, write their own music, and try to put it out independently. You know, try to get up some money, pony up some money, and push your project. But for them just to know how the music business is going these days, and put your best foot forward out there. You know, work hard. You know, chasing the majors. The majors are only going to mess with you if you already have a fan base and you've proven in the market and out there that, you know, that you're making some noise. So it's very rare that they're grabbing people that's just raw talent who nobody don't know. You know, with the social networks being out here, you know, you have to build your fan base up, and the label wants to see that you're able to move some records before they even signed you. They want to see if you did something on your own. So it's really good to get out here on your own feet and just try to put out your own things and see what happens, you know.
Yeah, but it's strange because when you think back in the late 80s, groups could push out a label which would develop an artist. I remember guys, a Future album, they released 7 singles. I mean, that's just saying the label just saying, yeah, you know, and if you went gold, as you said, you sold 250,000. But back in those days, it was considered big, and there was not much pressure. It doesn't, based on what you're saying, it doesn't seem as the labels have the patience to want to bring somebody up and says, we've seen something there, we want to cultivate, and we're in it for the long haul. Do you see that's shifted, where it's like, if you're not going to make us a hit right now, we don't need you, we don't have that time? Or do you think you just need to find the right label? What's your take?
My take is that you need to do it yourself, period. That's the best way nowadays, because you're not going to get on a label unless you already got something going. The label is not going to sign you if you haven't shown that you can stream, that you have a following. You got to have a following. That's just the way it's rolling. A major label, that's the way they work. That's the way the game go. But independent is the way, man.
Yeah, but if the Rude Boys were coming out today, and Gerald had seen you guys, would you get a deal with Warner now, as you did back then? So have they changed from how they gave you guys a chance?
Deals are still the same, basically. 360 deals. Deals are still the same. If they do pick you up and do like that, they front the money, they do it, you get percentages, and it's the same cycle.
Oh, but by that time, you guys went big nationally before they picked you up. They saw there was a chance. We see something here. We can develop.
They signed us without even knowing who we were. Gerald, they went on Gerald's word.
Oh, so no audition. You didn't have to. You didn't see in concert today.
Oh, you didn't even have to audition. Nothing. They never heard no music from us. Never. They didn't even know us. They gave us a deal.
Wow.
They went with Gerald's word, and Gerald's word turned out to be really good. He had two number one hit singles off the first album and a Billboard award the first album.
Wow.
He knew what he was talking about.
But was he consistent with you guys in the before he passed on the other albums? And was it harder?
Before he passed, we were not all associated. I mean, me and Gerald were still friends. We were writing and producing together, so we kept our relationship going. But as far as with the group, he wasn't dealing with the other members in the group anymore, just me.
Okay. Wow. So I guess I guess this is for any of the young artists who are looking out and thinking, I need to knock down on the majors, is that you're saying develop your own portfolio, put your stuff out there, try and get the stream, try and market it out, and in some sense you have some leverage in self to decide if you need to go by a major or trying to do it yourself. Is that sort of the advice you think?
That again?
Yeah, no, I'm saying for any of the young artists who'll be watching and listening, especially from you who's been in the game for such a long time, your advice is generally to cultivate your talent, your portfolio, your craft, trying to build a network, get people to like what you're doing, and not chase the quick, easy, quick money with the labels, but trying to have more control of your creativity.
Yes, definitely. And then if you hit it big on your own and do some good things, and then the label want to come and give you some money and, you know, push you to be bigger, than you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Just depends on what type of deal it is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Most of the time if you hit it big and you independent, you cool. You don't need it. You can't, the record label can take you to another level, but you're gonna start cutting yourself off with some of the money you get. So it's all about a sacrifice. Do you want to sacrifice your total independence and become bigger and even larger, but you get your money cut up more, or do you want to do it on your own hands? There's a lot of successful independent artists out here making it on their own, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, you've really given me a lot of your time and love you today and stuff like that. So I appreciate it. It's quite a lot of knowledge that we've received as well about, you know, for those who watch, who are looking to try and get in and stuff like that. So I appreciate it. The show that you're doing, where will people be able to get to see it? Is it live, or is it recorded live, or for people?
Yeah, it's gonna be live. So I'll give Elise the link, and she'll send it to you. It'll be going on like probably around 8 8 o'clock. I'm just trying to get to the studio so we can get all the kinks out or whatever. And it's going to be live. I'll send you the link and you'll be able to watch tonight.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, it's about 11 o'clock here in the UK, but yeah, depending on what time it is and stuff, but it's but hopefully people can be able to see later on some of the new stuff that you're coming out with and stuff.
No problem, no doubt.
But I appreciate it, and also appreciate at least for setting it up. And but as I said, you're in the middle of your going to a concert, taking time out to talk to us and giving us a nice history lesson, but also giving us a glimpse as to what's going on down for you and also for the artists coming forward, you know, really looking at building your own stuff and having more of an ownership and stuff. So definitely appreciate it. Good luck tonight, and you know, I'll be watching to see what's going on, and before, as we push this stuff out, we'll start to get people aware of what you're doing and stuff.
Okay, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care.
All right.
All right.